The Fugitive. A QM production. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
All right, and here we are back once again, talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. You'd think after this time I'd at least know who in the heck was on the program. I don't have to read a script. If you would like to be on the program tonight, you can, because this program was recorded about 2 weeks ago, vacation night here at KSAV, so no live programming, but the show must go on. And here to make the program go on are the three co-moderators of the Yahoo discussion group, The Fugitive News and Reviews. Hey, I got that right, too.
No, you didn't. It's Views and Reviews.
Nuts. What did I say? Oh, News?
News.
All right. Here they are in spite of that. Jeez, and I was boasting about getting it right. Let's let Bobby start things off. Take over.
Thanks, Dave. Here's a little quote from someone famous to start off today's show. The Fugitive broke all the stereotypes. It was, at the time, and still is, when you see the reruns, absolutely the best series done on American television. Who is that famous person who uttered those lines? Well, none other than novelist Stephen King, who wrote that as part of his introduction to the book, The Fugitive Recaptured. Is it true? Well, I might say the same thing myself. In fact, I probably have from time to time. Only I would add the words, most of the time, to the end of that quote. For all of the good memories that The Fugitive brings to fans around the world, many of whom choose to remember only the good days, the writers and producers of the series also had their dark moments when they totally lost focus and everything went wrong. At The Fugitive Views and Reviews and in our two books of the same name, we have never hesitated to point out those moments, because when you review a series, you need to review the entire package, not just the parts you liked. Today, Kitty, Ken, and I are going to pick our own personal worst of the best, those episodes we can't forget for all the wrong reasons. In the first half of this program, each of us will name our choices and make a few comments, and then in the second half, we'll consider them more in depth, and if we have time, we might even name a few notable runners-up. Unfortunately, there are quite a few. Richard Kimball visits 30 different cities and towns in that first season, but it's not until he gets to Georgia, Florida, and Reno, Nevada, that he meets the worst of season one. And we start with his visit to the biggest little city in the world, as it is called, and I know that Kitty has been waiting a long time to tell everyone just why this episode is so unforgettable for her. Kitty?
Well, this episode is called Where the Action Is. I like to call it Where the Action Isn't, or Where the Action Ain't, because I really didn't see anything that had any real action about this episode. Richard Kimball, it starts off pretty good because Richard Kimball is seen wearing a lifeguard outfit, and he looks pretty good in that outfit, but then the episode pretty much goes downhill from there. He's working in a hotel casino in Reno, and he ends up having a run-in with the casino owner's daughter named Chris Polachek, who is the biggest spoiled brat in the world. Suffice to say, she basically has made a career out of driving her father crazy. She basically just wants to do everything she can to embarrass him. And she blames her father for her mother's death, because her mother left, and she just thinks that he drove her mother away. The show culminates where Richard Kimball's trying to get away from her. She follows him, and she actually proposes marriage to him. I'm trying to figure out why. This woman needs serious help. I mean, this is like a very bad rendition of Fatal Attraction. He's doing everything he can to get away from this woman, and she just can't seem to take a hint. And eventually it all culminates where Richard Kimball gets father and daughter to sit down and have a conversation that they probably should have had at least 5 to 6 years earlier to save each other a whole lot of grief. And he tells her that you know, he didn't drive her mother away. Her mother left willingly, and she willingly gave him custody of the daughter. And so then she and Daddy finally kiss and make up, and Richard Kimball goes on his merry way. It was ridiculous, and you know, and just truly painful to watch as Chris Polachek just became more and more of a very bad rendition of Glenn Close from Fatal Attraction. So anyway, that's my pick of the worst for season one. So Ken, what's your pick of the worst?
I agree with you. That was a bad episode you talked about, especially having Telly Savalas in there, because he's a quality actor. We've seen him a lot in other things he's done, especially like The Twilight Zone, I remember.
Right. So you picked Storm Center. Tell us about Storm Center.
Yeah, I just so upset with that one, and you guys are making me suffer by having to talk about it again. It's episode 29 out of 30 in the first season. And what upsets me is the fact that is right toward the end of season one, you have this ridiculous soap opera. I call it Days of Our Lives, really, because really you have three or four characters in the whole episode, and about out of the 45 minutes they do the episode, I would say 43 minutes are spent on Marcy King and Richard Kimball having a lover's spat. They just go back and forth. They're stuck in a hurricane. Kimball can't get off because he's got to ride out this hurricane, and he's got this Marcy King in the house, and all she's doing is, she loves Kimball, she hates him, she wants to shoot him, she cries, she kisses him, Kimball pushes her away.
Oh, and then she turns him in, remember that?
Oh, yeah.
She turns him in, but then she wants to run away with him.
I can just imagine, you have the producers of the series, they get into their room and they say, hey guys, what episode should we produce this week? And someone comes up with a brilliant idea. Let's have Kimball and this not very attractive woman stuck together in a house, riding out a hurricane, and they just do a soap opera the whole episode, and then at the end, Kimball escapes. And this is episode 29. Why not end the season on a cliffhanger? Let's have Gerard and the One-Armed Man, and let's make an exciting end to season one so fans will come back for season two. I'm just so upset with Storm Center. I don't even want to talk about it really anymore. Bob, help me out.
Well, I'm not going to argue with either one of those choices. They are absolutely dreadful. But for me personally, the one that gives me nightmares and makes me want to just run away is The Homecoming. Homecoming is just beyond bad. I can't even attach a title to it or a name to it. The story is ridiculous. The acting is absolutely unbearable. I mean, we all remember the story. Kimball gets a job on a big estate in the southern part of Georgia. Probably was a plantation in earlier times. And he's working there, and he runs right smack into a family dispute, which is nothing new, because he's always running into those kind of things. And you have a young woman who has been in a mental institution because she saw a child attacked by some dogs, which sent her all over the edge, and she was put away for a while. Now she comes back to this estate, but when she comes back, she finds that her father has married this horrible woman, Dorena Pruett, who turns out to be the stepmother from hell. I mean, just perfectly awful. Now, okay, there's nothing wrong with that story. You could possibly make something out of it. But it goes completely off the tracks right away, mainly because of the horrible acting. Dorena Pruett is played by Gloria Graham, who was really a famous actress at one time. By this time in The Fugitive, she's on the short end of her career. But she was in a lot of movies. She was a notable actress. I mean, she was in the Greatest Show on Earth about the circus, which won an Academy Award as Best Picture. And now she's in this story with an absolutely unbearable and unbelievable Southern accent. It just makes me cringe. I mean, it's fingernails on the chalkboard. It's absolutely unbelievable to have to sit through this. The whole story is idiotic. It just goes on and on and on. It seems to take forever. It's not interesting. It's not compelling in any way. It's not believable in any way. Its ending is ridiculous. Every step along the way, and most of all, this story is an example of what I'm always criticizing about The Fugitive. Some of those writers believe that you could just take Richard Kimball and plunk him down the middle of anywhere. Oh, he's such an interesting character, and he's on the run, so what does it matter where we put him? No, put him anywhere. It doesn't matter. You'll get a great story. No, you won't, because in some stories he looks ridiculous. He doesn't belong there. In this story, this is a great example of not belonging in this story. You know, it isn't even about him. It's about this woman and her stepmother, and he's just there, and he does nothing. Frankly, David Jansen looks embarrassed to even be there, and I don't blame him. It's a terrible, terrible story. Who do you blame for this? I don't know. I mean, the acting is bad, but it was directed by Jerry Hopper, a very famous TV director for years, did over 600 different TV episodes. Plus, he was a director on many episodes of The Fugitive, some of the best ones. Did he go crazy this week? Did he just look at the script and say, this is hopeless, I can't do anything with it? Because it's badly directed, it's badly acted, it's badly paced. Everything about it is horrible. And actually, when we did viewer polls on that particular episode, that was one of the lowest rated by most viewers, if not the lowest. The average, according to what you have in our book, Ken, the average rating was 3 from most people, whereas Where the Action Is was 3.7 and Storm Center was 3.2. And Where the Action Is, Kitty gave it a 1 only because she liked David Jansen in his swimming trunks. You gave it a 2. I don't think you hated it quite as much as we did. And I gave it a 1 only because of the stripping scene where Chris Polachek is in a nightclub and is doing a striptease, and there's a real, honest-to-goodness stripper on the stage that they got for the show, and her name was Beverly Hills. So anybody, any stripper with a name like Beverly Hills has got to be great. So I really enjoyed that part of it. So I gave it a 1 for that reason. Storm Center, Ken gave a 0-2, but he said in the book he would have given it a -10 if he could have.
Well, you just have the two characters the whole time. I mean, 44 minutes of these two people gabbing back and forth. That's not The Fugitive.
And Kitty gave Storm Center a 3 because she thought a lot of it was funny.
Yes, I actually burst out laughing at one point in that episode because I thought it was so absurd.
You know, I gave it a 0, and the home company, Kitty gave a 2, Ken gave a 1, and I gave a 0. These are just awful episodes, and you know what they all have in common? I think you'll all be in agreement with me. What they have in common is the fact that they all feature three unbearable women that it's impossible to watch, even if the stories have been good, and they're not. It's these three characters that really drag it right down into the ground. It's impossible to watch Chris Polachek and not get sick. It's impossible to watch Marcy King, and it's impossible to watch Lorena Pruitt. I'm sorry. These are three of the worst. I mean, most of the characters, the interesting characters in The Fugitive are women, but these are three really, really awful characters surrounded by ridiculous stories that drone on forever and don't seem to ever end. And they're just dreadful stories. And in the second half of the show, you know, I want to go back and mention a few particularly bad scenes. I mean, the stories are bad, but there's some scenes in it that are even worse than the stories themselves that are just almost impossible to get around. But Ken, you're right. Storm Center is nothing but this woman who resents Kimball because he wouldn't give her an illegal abortion. And she had to go and get a back alley abortion, which caused her to not be able to have children anymore.
I don't think Roy Huggins envisioned his series to have these kind of dreadful episodes. He wanted The Fugitive, really, to be about this guy running from the law and going from town to town, eluding the police. Obviously, he's going to run into certain situations. But these episodes veered away from the concept of The Fugitive, and that's what upsets me when I run into these episodes.
All right. Well, excellent timing. Let's take a quick time out, and then we will continue with the best of the worst when we return to talk more Fugitive here on Sherevision Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past. All the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place you want to be. It's KSAV. Never far away, at work or at play. Hear the today, so stay with KSAB. Whether on the go or in your home, you'll hear songs of yesterday. KSAB will be with you to warm the day in every way. So share the music of KSAB. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be for songs that fill the day. It's KSAB. Stay with KSAB.
All right, and we are back already. It seemed like no time, didn't it, huh? There's actually a little change in the Talkin' Fugitive schedule for the next program or two. So, Bob, explain to the audience what that is.
Okay, Talkin' Fugitive is taking a few extra weeks off after today's program so that one of us, one of the hosts of this show, can relocate from the East Coast to the West Coast. Unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to say who that is. Okay, you talked me into it. It's me. And when we come back on April the 3rd, we will all be together on the same coast, which has not been true up till now, and I have a feeling the show is going to be much better than it's ever been. Plus, Dave will get to keep a tighter rein on us, right, Dave?
Oh, yes. Well, I might even figure out the name of your discussion group then.
Anything is possible. That's right. All right, so now we can get back to this. By the way, when we come back on the 3rd, I should mention, we're doing the worst episodes today, but we're going to do one of the very best, most memorable classic episodes from the entire series and from season one, Richard Kimball Visits Chicago to Search in a Windy City. That'll be part one, acts one and two. This is an outstanding story that has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about today. So let's go back and say a few words about each story a little more in depth. Where the action is, I have to agree with Ken. This is one of the things that really annoyed me, was that Telly Savalas is in this story. You mean to tell me that Telly Savalas could just stand in front of a camera? He's always one of my favorite actors. You could have him read the phone book, and I'd sit there and watch it. And he was that interesting. He was just an interesting person to listen to, a certain way of speaking. You put him in a story, you can't find anything for him to do? You mean to tell me you're just going to have him sit there and talk to this idiot girl, and they're going to argue with each other, and that's it? Why did you even pay him to do this? I mean, you could get anybody to do that. You could get any unknown actor to come in and do that. So that's one of the things that really offended me. And then there's this idiotic ending that Kitty mentioned, in which after this whole business about how the father and the daughter aren't getting along, we go through this whole nightmare, and Kimball decides to lock them in a room and say, well, you know what? You're going to have to talk to each other now, and you're going to have to work your differences out, and everything will be fine. Excuse me, could you possibly do that at the beginning of the story so we'll have to watch this? Kitty, wasn't that awful?
Oh, yeah, it was. And when I first saw this episode at the very beginning, when I saw that he was in Reno, Nevada, and I saw that Telly Savalas was the owner of the casino, I thought we were actually going to see an episode that maybe had something to do with the mob. Because certainly Telly Savalas could look like a scary kind of guy, and I could see him easily playing a mob type of person. And instead, we just end up with this stupid story of daddy can't rein it in with the daughter, and he won't tell her the truth about her mother, and she goes around, I don't know if she really is a slut or if she's just trying to act like one because it drives her dad crazy, but my attitude was, who really cares in the final analysis?
You know what the best scene is? You know, the one where she jumps in the pool and he fishes her out and then she slaps him and he slaps her back.
Yeah, you know, and that was.
But I wanted them to throw her back in the pool.
And that was actually something out of character for Kimball, because we've never, that's the one and only time we've actually seen him hit a woman in the series, but it was kind of warranted because she was acting like a total spoiled brat.
Yeah, I thought one of the most ridiculous lines in that episode, I guess it was toward the end, where this girl comes up with this loony line like, hey, let's get married, or let's leave town, or what was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, she went and she proposed marriage to him, and I was like, why can't this woman take a hint? He doesn't want anything to do with her, and here she is coming up to him and asking him to marry her. I mean, it's just stupid.
I would have liked to have seen Richard Kimball go into one of the casinos there in Reno and get into a card game. That would have been fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of things they could have done, but instead they decided to focus on her, and that's the problem with that. I mean, she starts out at the very, very beginning of the episode, you know, she's flirting with him at the pool, she gives him her measurements. It's just dreadful, you know, and he just pushes her off and he says, you know, you're just a little girl, don't be playing these games. But it's just, it's absolutely impossible to watch, and it's just a terrible, terrible story. You had decent actors and he did nothing with it.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of a shame because, you know, I thought that when I first saw the episode, I thought Joanna Frank was kind of a pretty actress, you know, and yet they've got her playing such a ditz brain in this.
Yeah, I don't like that when the series does that to women, where they kind of make them look a little loony-looking or a little dumbfounded. I really hate that.
They do that over and over again in this
series.
Yeah,
in The Homecoming, they did that with Shirley Knight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very strange. The Fugitive is a very strange series in that it treats women generally like lunatics, but there are also some strong women in the series that are ahead of their time. And I hope to do a show on this sometime soon about the strong women of The Fugitive, because there are some, we've talked about some of them already, who are ahead of their time. They do things, you know, they don't need men behind them to tell them what to do, but generally they're just playing into the thinking of the mid-60s, which is that most women are completely off track. You can't trust them with anything. They don't know what they're doing anyway. And then it's really extremely insulting. All right, let's move on, at the risk of making Ken terribly ill today. Let's move on to Storm Center. By the way, Ken, do you have a Marcy King on your wall with all those other women?
No, but if I did, I would put a dartboard next to it.
How about Chris Palachek? Is she there? Because you thought she was pretty.
No, but I do have Sophie. Sophie.
Sure. Oh, of course.
Somebody to remember that episode.
But, I mean, Storm Center, and by the way, there was one aspect of the story I liked. I mentioned it in my review that's in the book, and that is that I like the special effects they did, given the fact of their limited budget, when they were inside the building there, and it was coming apart, and there was the winds were blowing. It really was kind of realistic, and Ed Robertson has a part in his book about that, about how they did it, how they set up a set that would just come apart. There, at one point, they go into one room, she runs into a room, and right away the wind blows and the roof caves in. So it's very realistic. I actually like that part, but the rest of it is absolutely unbearable. And it's not as if it's not bad enough to watch this terrible woman, played by Bethel Leslie, by the way, another famous actress. I don't really remember her. I was too young. She's like an actress from the 50s. I don't know what she was ever in. Her name is familiar to me. But another terrible, terrible performance. And the whole story is simply ridiculous, because if you're going to set up this story like you talked about before, where she actually hates him, then don't give me these scenes where she starts coming on to him and you want to scream at the TV to Kimball not to give in to this. You know, the first time they're kind of getting close, he kind of shies away from it. But then after that, he simply goes for it. You know, and it's almost unbearable to watch them kissing each other, because you think to yourself, how low can you go? How low can you...
Well, yeah, that's why I started laughing, because it just seemed so out of character for Kimball to even want to kiss this woman. And then, you know, they kiss, and then there's a commercial. I could see on the tape that there was a commercial break. They come back, and they're all smiling at each other and lighting candles, and I started laughing even harder, because I was thinking, oh, give me a break. Are we supposed to now assume that they just had sex? I mean, because they've got that little glow about each other.
Ken, were you actually?
But then it doesn't take very long before Marcy hates him again, and then wants to turn him in. But then she wants to eventually run away with him. I mean, it was just, this woman was psycho.
Ken, did you actually sit through this entire thing?
I'll tell you what happened, Bob. during the 90s, you remember the A&E network?
Yeah, sure.
That showed all the episodes of The Fugitive in order.
Yeah, you could tape them. Yeah, I know.
And what I did, I'm a self-employed businessman, so I can take off time throughout the middle of the day. So at 1 o'clock every day, The Fugitive came on. So I got hooked on the series, you know, Never Wave Goodbye, all these good episodes, right. Search in a Windy City. And then I came to this one, and I watched it, and at the end of it, I go, great, I just wasted an hour of my life, you know, taking off precious work time to watch this. I couldn't believe it. And ever since that day, I've just been so upset. And then, you know, when the rest of the series went on, and when they got into these kind of storylines, I started realizing, great, you know, I'm going to get good episodes, I'm going to get bad episodes, and I'm going to get the really, really bad ones. And I was just hoping, please, don't be a bad one. Don't be a bad one. Didn't you have that experience when you were watching?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, you know, I saw the original series. I was a teenager, but, you know, I mean, some stories, I wondered, why am I watching this? This is not the kind of stuff I really like. And you had to worry about that. And again, I watched it, of course, like you did on A&E, and I taped the episodes, and some of them are just so awful that you can't wait for the hour to end. Now, we only have a few minutes left, and before I go back to the homecoming again, let's talk about a few of the runners-up, because these are not the only bad episodes. I know, Ken, that you absolutely hated The Witch. That was number two, right?
Yeah, that was the episode number two in the series called The Witch with the Little Girl. I thought it was out of place, it was unnecessary, and it really didn't have anything to do with the series at all, that episode, my opinion.
Right, and I know, Kitty, Ticket to Alaska was a favorite of yours.
Oh, that was awful. That played out like an extremely bad episode of Diagnosis Murder.
Yeah. It was ridiculous because I thought to myself, Kimball's on a boat going to Alaska. Well, you know what? If you're going all the way to Alaska, you might as well stay there. Because Gerard flies everywhere at a moment's notice, but he might just not go to Alaska. So why not just take a year off or something?
Yeah, because people up in Alaska probably wouldn't even care who Kimball was. So
exactly.
How would he ever find out that Kimball was there?
Yeah.
Here was a perfect opportunity to get away for a while. Other episodes that I absolutely find horrendous is The Garden House, absolutely awful.
Yeah.
That's the famous episode that Kitty likes where a woman gets shot and Kimball simply stands over her and watches her die.
Yeah.
I mean, he does nothing.
Yeah, I don't think I gave it as bad of a rating as everybody else did. I think I just gave it like a 5 for average, but it was a ridiculous episode. I mean, you know, that's the one thing Kimball, I've noticed as I watch this, is that Kimball is a very selective doctor in who he decides he's going to help. You know, we've seen the fugitive in three different incarnations with David Janssen, Harrison Ford, and Tim Daly, and if I was brought into the emergency room near death, I'm not sure I'd want David Janssen's Richard Kimball leaning over me.
Well, he did absolutely nothing while she was laying there. She deserved it, of course, but still, I mean, it was absolutely horrendous. I would also add to those episodes a Bloodline, an episode literally for and about dogs that goes to the dogs. Absolutely terrible.
And just no story to that one at all.
Not one
storyline.
One minute, guys.
Okay. Bloodline is another bad one, and all of those stories. And then there are some that are just mediocre. You go, well, you know what, this is not really come up to the fugitive standards. That's the one thing about this series. You know, when you have, some people think I'm too hard on it, but I say when you have a classic television series like this, it sets a standard. And when you set a standard, it's like being in sports. If you're the best running back in the NFL for two seasons in a row, everybody expects you to continue to be that. And so when you have a season when you get 500 yards instead of 2,000, they go, oh, what's the matter with him? He's no good anymore. Same thing with The Fugitive. You've got the classic episodes, and then they hit the bottom of the barrel, and it's shocking. And you go, jeez, this thing's coming off the tracks. Where are they going with this? The one good thing I'll say before we close up here is the fact that The Fugitive does such good classics that they more than make up for these. You could actually sit through them because you know somewhere down the road is coming a true classic episode, and you need to be there. So it doesn't really matter. That's the thing that always allowed me to get past these.
All right, and Ken, I'm feel so bad about it. I'm going to send you some money to compensate you for that wasted hour way back in the mid-1990s.
Oh, thanks.
All right, the least we can do. It was a touching story. All right, a good job on the best of the worst. Now, you're going to be back when? April 3rd.
That's correct.
All right, so everybody, be back on April 3rd. We will once again be talking Fugitive. With the three co-moderators, I won't cop off the group. The three co-moderators, one more time. You'll be a part of it then, live April 3rd on Retro Radio.